Hey everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Abe.
And we are starting a very special series. We've been working on this actually for about a month now. And it is So You Want to Play Magic. With this series, we're going to include not just our podcast itself, but also there will be a few YouTube videos to show you different things. I have seen a lot of people starting to play Magic the Gathering now. They've picked it up throughout the pandemic, playing Arena, playing Magic Online, or even playing Commander. And a lot of people, they may not know where to look, or, which is really great, they want to ask the community, how do you do X? What is X? So we're going to get into all of that. We are going to be breaking things down to the basics. For the advanced players, this may be not your cup of tea, but who knows, you may learn a small little bit of intricacies as we dive into the rules a little bit. Before we get into all of that, though, we want to give a small history on what is Magic, what is the game, and what drew us to it, because we all have our own reasons. We've kind of heard about when we talked with Julian John, what drew him to Magic the Gathering, but what drew us to it, and what keeps us in it, even during this time where we really can't play on paper, why do we pursue the game? So, Abe, Jerry, what's Magic the Gathering?
Magic the Gathering was a card game that a gentleman by the name of Richard Garfield had created. It was actually on the back of another game.
Richard Garfield, PhD. put some respect on that name.
Richard Garfield, PhD from University of Pennsylvania. Go. He had created the game back in 1993. It was originally a game that he had put on the back burner for a board game that he was trying to push called Robo Rally. But the person who ran Wizards of the Coast at the time, his name was Adkinson, Peter Adkinson, didn't like it and asked him to come up with a game that you could play while, quote, waiting in the line at conventions, unquote. And that is how Magic the Gathering was born. It was originally debuted in Dallas, Texas at the Origins Game Fair. Instant success, a year's worth of card supply was bought out. People scooped all of this up, and an immediate reprint needed to be ordered. The first print run, as we know, was the Alpha, and the reprint run would be known as Beta. A little bit further on, in 1996, that was when the first Magic Pro Tour was born. Magic's popularity had shot up. People loved it. People loved the stories that were being told of the two brothers, Urza and Mishra. And the Pro Tour in 96 was invite-only, offering $1 million in prizes. To qualify for the series, there was a world system of qualifier tournaments and large events to allow players to earn a spot on the Pro Tour.
And then we kind of get to, from there, it continued to grow. I entered the game shortly hereafter, probably I would say 97, 98 is when I came in. I saw it being played and I was very curious about it. These people casting these dragons, talking, almost like detailing a little bit about it, cause I guess like adding some role play or some D&D aspect to it. But I just thought the game was cool. So while I'm there playing my Pokemon TCG, getting my base set one and jungle set action going, evolving Eevee for the first time because that came out, I was like, man, that looks really fun. I had to choose between the two different card games. I was like, I like this one a little bit more. And that's how I initially went into Magic the Gathering. And that was here in Hampton, Virginia. The game evolved so much that it actually drew the attention of MTV. And they have some of, I think, the best commercials that you can find. If you YouTube
so good.
MTV Magic the Gathering, I mean, they gave these personalities like the Hammer, crazy nicknames. They're playing outdoors, unsleeved, no playmats. You've got like the girls in the back like, oh my God, is that the Hammer? How is he going to beat them? Like fawning over these players, just doing their best to talk this game up. And
well, and then on top of that, you had the actual commercials that were advertising the product, and those were off the chain. Like, it's a fantasy card game, right? There's dragons and wizards and sorcery and stuff like that. So these commercials had that, wizards and dragons and stuff, but it was the early and mid and late 90s, so very janky special effects and the costumes because they were super low budget. So, you know, the makeup looks like it was done by people who'd never done makeup before, and the costumes were thrown together as quickly as possible. And you'd have wizards show up and in the snow. They're just incredible. If you haven't, we'll put some links for you guys to take a look, because these are top-notch videos.
It's absolutely outstanding. But anyways,
I remember during that time period when they were actually advertising and playing Pro Tour content on ESPN2. If you can remember going back that far.
Like it received huge national attention, and then it died off. And I would say the early 2000s is probably what the worst time period for Magic, if you will.
Yeah, there were a couple reasons for that, but we won't dig into those too hard.
And the game has new sets coming out every year to keep it fresh. There's multiple formats that you can play, which we're going to get into later on as well in our follow-on episodes. But more at the heart of what is Magic the Gathering, it is you and another player facing off, or possibly more, in a duel, casting spells and creatures and attacking each other and trying to defeat the other opponent before they defeat you. There's multiple ways you can win. There's multiple ways you can cause your opponent to lose also. And that's really how you go about playing the game. And once you reach one of those points to where they lose or you win, that's it. And you kind of have to put it that way, because some cards just state an opponent loses the game or you win the game. And that's
you lose the game.
Yeah, or you lose the game. But it's okay, though, because now if you miss your pack triggers, you can go back and redo it. But I'm not going to get into that either.
Yeah, that's a little advanced for this episode, Rob.
Yeah. So
I want to touch on something real quick, though. Obviously, there is a card type now for Planeswalker.
Yes.
Which are characters in the Magic multiverse, the Magic universe, that have the ability to teleport themselves between different realms, between different planes of existence, travel to these different worlds.
They can travel through the blind eternities without getting hurt.
Right. But when Magic originally started, that wasn't a card type. That didn't exist. However, one of the first things Magic ever used as an advertisement was the slogan, "You are a Planeswalker," which was, you know, as a younger person just starting to get into the game, "You are a Planeswalker" was so cool, because it's like, oh man, I'm a wizard. I am casting these spells. I am the one who is summoning a dragon. And it gave you such a sense of, not just a sense of fantasy and wonderful escapism, but it also gave you this incredible sense of power and action. And obviously this game was targeted at people who would go to conventions, people who were, you know, nerds, misfits, a lot of that type of crowd. At the time, it was still relatively unpopular, you know. It wasn't cool to like comic books and Dungeons and Dragons and play card games and Pokemon and stuff like that. So this game that advertised itself by telling you, the player, that you were totally kick-ass, you were able to summon dragons and defeat your opponents.
Absolutely. And it helped give them something to go do and interact with others too at your local game stores. Public libraries had play days also, where you could go and just meet up and play this card game. Got you out of the house and interacting. And that was one thing I really liked about it from the beginning. And one of the main aspects I liked, and we often call it the gathering, and that has so much more meaning to the grinders, those who travel. In its title, it is Magic the Gathering, but it's the gathering that really makes the game.
Yes, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Let me explain here. This is the reason why Magic has been a better card game and miles long more successful than most other card games, It follows along the same formula as World of Warcraft did for many years. Their goal wasn't so much the game, it was to build this community of people, of like-minded people who enjoyed this product together.
I think it's absolutely fascinating how people from different walks of life are attracted to Magic the Gathering, because most of my friends that I've made over the past many years have come from Magic the Gathering. And, you know, they're people that I met, obviously, while I was serving in the Navy and moving all over the place, finding a game store, I automatically had something in common with a group of people in a totally strange place where I had no friends and I'd never met any before. All of a sudden, we have this wonderful thing in common. And as you guys will learn, there's an entire language. Magic the Gathering has all of these terms and slang, and players speak in a certain way when they talk about these cards. And that's something that when you meet another Magic player, you automatically have the ability to communicate. It's like having a second language you can speak in with someone else that you just met, which is so wonderful because it gives you the opportunity to bond. And it's not just with strangers. You know, I am not a Commander player. I'm pretty against playing Commander. I don't enjoy the format very much, but my entire play group in my hometown, all of my friends are Commander players. That's the format they play. Occasionally we'll draft, but if I want to hang out with them, I have to play Commander. That's the only format they play. So I borrow a deck and spend some time playing Magic, and I might not enjoy the format, but I sure as hell enjoy the gathering.
Definitely. I'm in the same boat with you when it comes to Commander, and right now that's kind of one of the few things we have, but it's still something that we can get together and play. That's a little bit about what is Magic the Gathering, and one of the key things that it's been so why it's been so successful is it's built that community. And I think another thing too is this is actually a very easy game to play. Mastering it, however, is incredibly difficult. And that's one thing I really believe a lot of us enjoy about it is a lot of the people that play Magic the Gathering love to be challenged. And this game does all of that for you. How can I beat out my opponent? How can I increase my win percentage just enough to do the best at a 15-round tournament? To try to take home $20,000, or even to go to your first FNM and get that first 4-0 and take home a playmat, or take home 3 booster packs for the first time. All of those times you will remember, and it's an incredible feeling. But if you just want to sit down at the kitchen table and play with your friends however you feel, the game allows you to do that. There's no wrong way, really, I guess, to enjoy the game. Unless you're in a tournament setting, then of course there's rules
unless
and everything
else. Unless you're Alex Bertoncini.
Yeah, or Alex Bertoncini, yeah. And we'll be talking about all of this stuff in later episodes. And again, it's just bringing up Alex Bertoncini. I have stories already of that from my experiences that I really love. Our buddy Bobby Whitehouse, former co-host of the Snapcast, got to talk with Alex Bertoncini during a game because he was kind of salting off. He's like, hey, man, you know, it's just a game. And he's like, yeah, you're right. He calmed down. Well, a couple weeks later, he did get banned again from Magic for cheating. But either way, it's just, it's interesting, the community that you can build up. And regardless of the level of play, most people love just talking about the game. So why do you guys think Magic has been so successful?
Well, it's like I said before, their ability to attract people based on that the game is a community rather than the game itself. Obviously, the game is very awesome, but even in advertisements of the game to this day, it's all about working together, or in the case of the game, playing together. Having that group of people is what really sells this game and makes it above beyond the rest of the competition. The other parts of its success are that it's story-driven. There is a story with all these cards. In some weird way, the flavor text on all of the cards can almost tell the whole story but sometimes they don't, and you want to go further into it. So you end up going into other Magic the Gathering product, such as the comic book series or the novels from back in the 90s and early 2000s. There's always more to it than what the cards can even offer.
I think that is one of the best points about how Magic gained so much success, because obviously now it's a cultural staple. It has cemented its place. There's most people have an understanding of Magic the Gathering, even if it's just they know that it exists, right? You hear a lot of people make jokes like, oh, Magic, you mean like Penn and Teller or Houdini, sleight of hand, stuff like that. And they think it's hysterical because it's a card game, but it's called Magic, which means you're doing some sort of, you know, magic trick or grand illusion, David Copperfield type stuff. And then you've got the crowd that says, well, it's, you know, it's a children's card game. You're an adult. You're playing a children's card game. And it's like, well, they're allowed to enjoy it. And so am I, because when I was their age, I was enjoying it. Why would I give it up just because I'm older? That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, literally it's fun for all ages. It's not one of those things that has a warning on the side that says warning ages 4 through 89 only. You know, you're allowed to enjoy it at any age and any walk of life, like we mentioned. There's a lot of people you'll meet at tournaments or Grand Prix or events in some way related to Magic who are people you would never expect to see. Look at Cassius March. He's a professional NFL football player, and he's also a Magic the Gathering celebrity who's opening his own Magic the Gathering store and goes to tournaments and hangs out with Magic the Gathering players who are typically perceived as overweight, Doritos eating nerds, you know, the stereotypes. And then you have this professional athlete who loves the game just as much as we do and is more than willing to talk to you about it. And normally there is no connection between yourself and this NFL player, but this game has brought you together all of a sudden. And it goes in so many different directions. There's so many other examples.
And it doesn't just end with, you know, like football players either. I mean, we have MMA fighter Josh Barnett. He plays Magic the Gathering. It is a wide spectrum of people.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a huge Magic the Gathering fan. He's a famous actor. He's yeah. been, you know, he's been in movies for, what, like close to 20 years now? And he's been playing yep. Magic almost the whole time. And
him and Robert Downey Jr. also are very into it.
Yeah, I think Tom Holland also plays. It's just one of those things that, like, it's truly an enjoyable game regardless of who you are. If you enjoy games, if you enjoy playing games, because there are some people who don't. They don't care for card games. They don't care for games of certain kinds. And that's, you know, that's on them. But if you enjoy playing games, then Magic the Gathering is, like Rob said, it's very simple to learn. It's hard to master, but it's very easy to pick it up and enjoy yourself, even if you're just being taught how to play.
So what was it, or what about it, I would say, and I think we've both already hit on it, or all three of us have hit on this. What keeps us in the game? Well, what keeps us playing through all of the bad losses, the salty days, the banning of our decks? Our decks are no longer allowed to be played because a key card gets banned out of it. What keeps us coming back?
It's been a part of, well, for me, it's been a part of my life for almost over 20 years now. I couldn't see myself not doing it at this point. Just because you make it a little more difficult for me because you banned a card out of my deck doesn't mean that I'm not going to try and continue to be the best I can be at it. For me, it went from being just kind of a casual fun game to now I love being good at this game. It's kind of my niche. You know, it's kind of my calling in life.
All right, what about you, Abe?
It's interesting. You know, I think actually I want to take it back first before I tell you about what keeps me in the game. I want to talk to you about how I got into the game.
Oh, okay.
Because it that is actually how I got into the game is one of the reasons why I stay in the game. So I can remember it very clearly. You know, there's a lot of people who have memories and they're kind of fuzzy. Important events in their life doesn't really stick, but I have this crystal clear memory of the very first time I ever saw Magic the Gathering cards. It was my 7th birthday, 1997, May 1st. My oldest friend, who was a year or two older than me, but we had known each other. He had known my parents since before I was born. So technically my oldest friend. For my 7th birthday, he gave me a Magic the Gathering starter deck. At the time, in 97, they were theme decks. So it had a theme. And, you know, it was a deck that was built around this theme. So it was the Sparkler. That was the name of the deck. And it was blue-red. Basically, these days you'd call it, like, is it burn control? It's basically throw damage at your opponent with some counter spells, and then you have some cards with buyback that let you get the cards back. And the deck box has this really vivid picture of Volrath, the character from Magic the Gathering. And that image is just burned into my head forever. And he gave me this deck of cards. It's like, here's this cool game we've been playing, him and his parents, his family. And I was like, what is this? And he was like, it's called Magic the Gathering. It's a neat card game that you can play. And I opened that deck box and saw the islands, Randy Gallegos, just these magnificent pieces of art on these cards. And I was so stuck. I was like, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Not only is it a game, but every single one of these cards has beautiful artwork. I love art. I love creativity. And then it has a story wrapped around it. It's like a fantasy world that talks about sorcerers and stuff. And this is from, what is it? The Stronghold Weatherlight Saga. So they were talking, this was pre-discussion about Urza and Mishra. So it's the Weatherlight crew and defeating Volrath and Krovax, and then gets into the Phyrexians. Wonderful stories. The books are incredible. Please read them if you haven't read them before. But I saw these cards and I was just absolutely blown away. And from that point on until about 2004, basically any spare money I had was spent on Magic card packs. And once I started high school, I kind of stopped playing because I got distracted, you know, and I was busy with school and I didn't have a group of people to play Magic the Gathering with. And when you take the gathering out, it's really not that enjoyable. Flash forward, I'm in the Navy. I've been in the Navy a couple of months, and one of my buddies, while I'm stuck at this training command waiting to transfer to my next station, he turns to me and he goes, hey, have you heard about this cool new card game called Magic the Gathering? And I looked at him and I was like, bruh, what do you mean by new card game? And he's like, well, it's this new game that just came out. And I was like, okay, first off, that's super incorrect. And second off, what are you talking about? And he's like, oh, I saw that they're selling cards at the store on base. you want to buy some and play? And I was like, yeah, let's do that. And I was just dropped right back in, like feet first into the volcano. There was no hope of me getting out. We bought some cards. We started playing. I had to relearn the game, essentially, because there were so many new card types and the rules had changed. And all of a sudden, I was like, I want to continue to do this. These cards are still so great. And I got that feeling that I had when I was 7 years old and, you know, punched in the face with emotion. And then when I was in the Navy, transferring from place to place, every time I moved, I had that ability to make friends, like we were talking about, immediately. You find a card store, a comic book shop, somewhere that sells Magic cards, and immediately you have something in common. So all of my friend groups over the last many years have been Magic players, and it's kept me in the game because all of my friends are Magic players. So even if we're not, you know, we're hanging out, we're having dinner, whatever the case is, there's still Magic somewhere in the conversation. Even if we're not actively talking about Magic the Gathering, all of us know about it. All of us are involved with it. And eventually it will come up and we will start talking about cards. And, you know, at that point, it takes an act of Congress to stop you from talking about Magic the Gathering, because you get on a tangent like I am right now, and it's very, very hard to stop talking because it's just so enjoyable. The game is so enjoyable. The people you meet, the gathering aspect of it is so wonderful. And these days, I don't really play competitively anymore. You know, I'm out here in Vegas working on school, and we, pre-pandemic, obviously, were doing high-end house drafts, where we would play draft, which is a format that we'll discuss in a later episode. But the buy-in was much more expensive than normal, which put a very hefty cash prize up at the top, and it would attract some very talented players. So our group expanded from, you know, the handful of people it was to Pro Tour competitors, Pro Tour champions, professional poker players who played Magic when they were kids, that kind of stuff. And it's amazing how the crowd just comes together. The gathering aspect of it is so strong. And, you know, now I play a little Arena, play a little bit of Moto every now and then, Magic the Gathering online. And you guys, the Snapcast, getting to talk about Magic cards, and my friends who are working on the financial aspect of it with speculations. And if you listen to our previous episode, you can hear all about that. But it is just one of those things that it's going to be a part of you for your entire life. I have a giant Magic the Gathering tattoo. I got it signed by the artist who drew the card. And then I had the signature tattooed on top of the artwork. Like, that's not something that somebody does if they just kind of enjoy something. Like, that's somebody who is either in a cult or totally devoted to a hobby. And I might not be a very active player anymore, but Magic the Gathering has been and always will be my life. And I love it. And I am so grateful that I get the opportunity to share with you guys and to talk about my experiences. And I am so looking forward to this series, because teaching new players is one of my favorite things to do in Magic, because it brings other people into the community and it helps other people have that same sense of magic and wonder that I had when I was 7 years old and saw that island for the first time.
Absolutely. And I know you're not the only one with Magic tattoos. Jerry, I know you definitely have Magic tattoos because of the love of the game and the impact had on your life.
I have a Dark Ritual tattooed as a quarter sleeve on my left arm, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Probably my favorite card of all time, alongside another one we'll talk about later. But having Dark Ritual on me, like, I am devoted to this game as much as anyone else could be. My beginnings were a little bit not based on my birthday or anything like that, but it was more that I moved a lot when I was a kid. My parents, mother and stepfather specifically, opened up casinos. That was their thing. They would open up a casino. A year later, they would go to another casino somewhere else in the state of either Indiana, Illinois, or Ohio, or Kentucky. So there was a lot of moving around where I was going. This kind of kept me from being able to get into many sports because you don't have time to practice. Parents don't have time to take you there. You don't have the ability to stay with a group of people to work with you. So I had to pick up another thing along the way. And when I was in Minooka, Illinois, in 2002, I saw a couple kids at the lunch table just slinging around some cards. Looked cool. I had no idea what I was looking at the time. Now that I remember it, it was just an elf deck and a goblin deck from the Onslaught block. And I immediately latched onto it. It was really cool looking. The first Lord of the Rings movie had just come out, so that whole mythical fantasy thing was all, you know, that whole thing was there. So I was able to attach myself to this crowd this way. When I learned how to play the game and moved again, I just was able to immediately find another group of friends who did this thing. And this would carry on throughout my life up into my adulthood. For those who don't know me, I enlisted in the Air Force in 2010. When I enlisted and made my travel to Texas, I found a card store there in Texas. When I moved to Korea, I found a card store in Korea that I could go to on the regular basis. I did the same thing in Virginia. I did it in West Virginia when I lived with my dad for that short period of time. And I do it now that I'm back here in the Chicagoland area. The game has given me the opportunity to socialize with people and keep contacts because of my not so secure life. You know, I move around a lot and it helped me really obtain, you know, that kind of friendship and that kind of kinship over time.
Yeah. For me, again, mine started at the local game store where I was playing Pokemon and kind of like working for Subway sandwiches, if you will. I'd show up, I'd take out the trash, and they'd buy me a footlong sub from Subway when they were still $5 for any of them, not just the special $5 footlongs. Anyways, I got out of it when I moved from Pennsylvania because the nearest game store was about a 40-minute drive, and my parents didn't want to take me. I didn't know anyone. But I heard someone talking about Magic the Gathering in one of my 8th grade classes. So here I am, little 13, 14-year-old kid, all awkward, like starting to go through puberty, so even more awkwardness, you can only imagine. And immediately, though, as soon as this person starts talking Magic the Gathering, I want to go talk to them. I get a new friend now, Joe Miller, great guy, and we played Magic a little bit. Then, joined Navy, fast forward, 2013. I'm at Warped Tour with a middle school friend, Bobby Whitehouse, and we see a Magic the Gathering booth at Warped Tour, giving out Innistrad starter decks, like little 40-card decks, intro to Magic. We picked them up as a joke, and that's how it took off for us. 2013, because then Theros releases. We get into RTR Theros block, my very first block. We start going to the local game store for FNMs. Then we hear of the Virginia Beach Classic coming up. Oh, what's this? It's a bigger tournament. 8 rounds. Cash prize. Hey, let's go play in that. And that, for me, started my big competitive play. There was 160, 170 players there total. Convention center, we were full up. It was a blast. And it was incredible to see how far these players have traveled. We also met Alex Sarver there. We met both Jerry and Chris at the local game store in Hampton. And then over time, we decided, let's do the Snapcast. At first, we were Team Revelation, Revelation Gaming MTG. I remember all of the stuff with that. And we just started helping each other improve and get better. And then we saw, if we can help each other out, why can't we help others? And then that's how the Snapcast really came about. That's how the podcast came about. How can you improve each other and making each other better? And here we are now, 152 episodes later. And I like that we're going back to our roots, giving back to you, our listeners, the new players, our original audience. What is Magic the Gathering? How can I get into it? And we're going to be teaching you all those little insights, the small little tricks, the small intricacies with magic. When do you have priority? What is priority? What is the stack? How can I respond to things? All of that is going to get covered in the next 5 to 6 episodes, possibly, because there's a lot to go through. And we really hope to hear your feedback, and I would love to hear how you got into magic. Whether it's on iTunes, I think you can comment on Spotify. Submit a comment on our website, on Twitter, whatever it may be. We want to hear your story. What drove you to magic? What questions do you have? Because as these episodes come out, we want to answer them. We want to help them. Again, I can't beat this drum enough, but the Magic the Gathering players group on Facebook is a wonderful place to start. I've received a lot of insight from the members there. Thank you for that, for answering my questions. And we're going to be getting to all of them. And I've been writing down the names of people who have been asking basic stuff so that they know when these come out and they can get directed to it. And if you know people who have questions, please direct them to us. If you want to hear more about it, let us know. If you think we got something wrong, great. We want to hear that. We want to correct it. Last thing we want to do is teach you wrong so that when you go to your next event, you think you know how an interaction works, and next thing you know, it's wrong, and you're like, well, screw those guys at the Snapcast. Hopefully it's not that way, but you know what? I mean, we're all military. We're used to it. We're sorry, and the only thing we can do is hope to improve. So we really hope that you guys stick through us throughout this entire series of What is Magic the Gathering, and that you grow to love the game just as much as we love this game. I think the dedication that we've shown with, again, 152 episodes and counting, we couldn't want anything more than Magic the Gathering to come back in paper. The travel, I love it. Meeting the people, seeing how everyone's doing, it was a wonderful thing, and I can't wait to get back to that.
Just curious for you guys, since we're talking about our intro, where we're at today. Do you guys remember your first starter deck?
Ooh. Like, first competitive deck or first deck I took to an FNM?
First deck you took to an FNM. Yep.
Oh, man.
Think about that. Your first deck to an FNM, the most recent deck you've played. There's a whole story in there in that. Like, for me, my first deck I took to an FNM was the Bait and Bludgeon starter deck from original Mirrodin with Broodstar on it. The most recent deck I took to an FNM was Blue-Red Is It Prowess.
Nice.
How much of a story there is. How did I get to that point? That's the most interesting part. To remember your roots, to go back to where you are today.
All right. I've got a good one then. So I told you about the first deck that I ever had, the Sparkler.
Yep.
Which doesn't count in this instance because I'd never played competitively when I was younger. I played a little bit with my brothers and my friends, and there was an after-school Magic the Gathering club at my middle school. You know, my buddy played. We did, like, basically team Magic. So I had a Burn deck, I had Slivers, and I built my brother Burn, and we just, you know, you just stomped on people. But I would say that the first deck I took to an event, I'm not going FNM because I didn't start playing FNM for a very long time after I started playing Magic again. So the first deck that I brought to a real event, I was stationed in Groton, Connecticut for training. And I had just started getting back into Magic, like I told you guys. And a buddy of mine told me about a Magic the Gathering charity tournament that was taking place just off base. And somebody's sister had cancer, and they were raising money to help with the treatment and so on and so forth. So it was a charity event. A bunch of prizes had been donated. And at this point, I think I had been playing Magic again for probably a couple of weeks. So totally lost, had no idea what competitive play was. And I had been playing a lot of M14 draft because that was the set that had just come out. So I was like, oh, there's this super cool harpy that has flying and lifelink. It's a 4-mana 2/2, but it's got two keywords. Like, that's a pretty good card. And it's, you know, black, black, and 2 mana to cast. I'm just going to build a mono black, like, life gain, life drain deck. So I slapped together this mono black pile and went to this charity tournament with my friend. And I didn't win a single game because obviously my deck was horrible. It was built very poorly. It was not competitive. Everybody else was playing with actual competitive decks. I was the guy who had never played before and showed up with the pile of cards he owned. And I remember one of the players, one of my opponents, after they beat me, they go, "Hey," you know, they were being very nice, obviously, because I was like clueless new Magic player. They're like, "Your deck's pretty interesting. You should try this card, Corrupt. That would go really well in your deck." And I was like, "Oh, what's that card do?" And they told me what it does. And I said, "Oh man, that sounds great." And the guy goes, "Yeah, one of the guys selling cards in the corner will probably have it." So I like run over to the vendor and I bought, I think, like 2 or 3 copies of Corrupt and swapped them out for some of the cards in my deck in the middle of the tournament because I had no clue. And obviously there were no deck lists. It was a small charity event. And I still lost every game afterwards, even with Corrupt in my deck. But it was fine because I won a couple of door prizes and I was supporting a charitable cause. And I was playing this game that all of a sudden my interests had been renewed. My love had been rekindled. And I was at this tournament in the middle of nowhere at like a convention center. Or I think they rented a church basement or something. It was just so special. It blew my mind. And I got a playmat, not from that specific event. Well, I got it at that event, but it was from another event. And I used that playmat for, man, like a year, just because it was the one that I got at this first tournament. And it meant so much to me because I had never owned a playmat before. You know, when I was a kid, there were no sleeves. There were no playmats. You used those little glass beads to keep track of stuff. So it was a totally different world. And then fast forward, I would say the most recent deck that I've played is Historic Grixis Bolas, which is kind of a self-build. It's pretty good. It's got good matchups for the most part. It's basically Grixis control, but a bunch of planeswalkers and main deck. It's designed for best of one. So you just main deck all of like the answers to everything in the format and hope that you can go Narset or Ashiok on turn 3, whichever one's appropriate for your matchup. And then Bolas on turn 5 with some draw spells and counter spells and just overvalue your opponent and win. It's a pile of cards just like the first one that I played, but this one has an actual theme and a purpose. That is my first and last.
Let's see. My first deck. It was definitely an FNM deck. And I believe it was like an 86 card sliver deck because M14 was out. We just got a bunch of slivers. I had no idea on deck construction other than it has to be at least 60 cards. No sideboard. Didn't know anything about sideboarding. And I'm going off of my re-entry into Magic. Otherwise, going on Onslaught Torment Judgment and style kitchen table. I had a Dwarves deck. I had an Elves deck. It was mainly your tribal decks. I really wasn't trying to do too much with maximizing value or anything like that. But that sliver deck, it was a blast. But kind of got introduced to also some of the salty Magic the Gathering players, or the stuck up ones, the conceited ones, because you know they kind of talk trash on the deck. Oh, that's cute. Oh, okay, I guess you can bring that here. It is only F and M. Did terrible. Then the first competitive deck was Mono Red Devotion. And that was for the Virginia Beach Classic. We looked into some decks online, did some net decking, if you will. So that was my first competitive deck in Standard. My most recent deck that I took, though, was Battle of Wits. Was the last deck I played with at a structured event. 240-card main deck, 15-card sideboard.
Rob, you're the craziest human being alive.
I had to buy a... I had to buy a 300-card case just to hold the deck. So whenever I would say, let me pull out my deck box, I got this long Dragon Shield like card holder, and people were like, what is that? But it was a blast, and that was the greatest thing. And I got to teach people about Battle of Wits because they had only heard it, like the mythical legend, like, oh, there's this 200-card deck. Oh, man, there's a deck that's like a mile high. Yes, it is atrocious. Miserable to shuffle. I run 44 fetch lands in it. So the amount of shuffling I had to do was just absurd. Never going to do it again, but man, was it fun.
I took Battle of Wits to an FNM. I went 5-0 with it. And you know what? It don't matter if your deck has 240 cards if they're all 240 good Magic cards.
Exactly. You play like 15 or like 10 different combos in it overall, including Battle of Wits, which really isn't a combo. It's just a card
that
says... Oh,
no. Mine was the standard one when Battle of Wits was last printed in standard. It was a Grixis control deck.
Oh, gross.
I sat there and did nothing for most of my games, except I actually won a game with Battle of Wits once because I drew it in my opening seven. And the look on my opponent's face when I played it, he's like, this is dumb.
Yep.
Good times were had. It wasn't as dumb as you think, I promise.
But it's those memories that makes me love this game. And we hope that you all, our listeners, will grow to love this game too. And you may not, and that's okay. But don't let one bad experience spoil Magic the Gathering for you. You're going to have tough days. You're going to have miserable days. I'll even say it. You're going to have just days where you question, why do I play this game? But think back as to why you got into it to begin with. And keep that in mind, because you will have great days, great memories will be made, and it is just an absolute blast.
Yeah, it's very easy to get lost in the negative aspects of it, because it is such a challenging game to master. And the old expression, it's possible to play a perfect game and still lose, it holds true in Magic. That's a very valid expression for this game. You can do everything right. You can make all the right decisions. You can play your deck perfectly, and you can still lose. It happens. It happens often. And it's incredibly frustrating, but you do have to consider one of the things is that it's just a game. Even if you're playing super competitive, high stakes finals of a pro tour, or you know, the finals of one of our high-end house drafts against a former pro tour champion at, you know, the sports bar, and there's a ton of money on the line, or some pro points, or a trophy, or the playmat, or victory at your local FNM, or you know, you finally got the chance to beat that one buddy of yours whose deck always beats yours. There's still going to be the bad days and the good. And it's so important to understand that you can look back on the good days and realize why you want to continue to play. And if you guys take away anything at all from this episode, it is the fact that this game, if you give it the love and attention that it deserves, it will return it in favor, in kind, and you will have some of the best moments and memories of your life, the most enjoyable times. It's one of the best games ever created. So if you enjoy playing games, you can have the opportunity to play some of the best games of your life, because each game of Magic is different. each game of Magic is unique, and there will be experiences as you grow as a Magic player that you will never have the opportunity to repeat because the game was so special, the way your creatures were set up, the board state. You know, we'll discuss that in a later episode as well, but the way that the game played out can be so incredibly unique that you will remember it for the rest of your life. I'm sure all of us have stories, both good and bad, that we can tell you off the top of our heads without a moment's hesitation. We can tell you about a bad beat, the time we lost a game in a horrible fashion, or a time we won in a spectacular fashion. All of us have those stories, and hopefully you guys, as you grow as Magic players, will get the opportunity to have those as well.
Definitely. But that's going to do it for us here in this episode. Thank you again, everyone, for listening, and please be sure to follow us. Let your friends know. You can find us on iTunes, on Spotify. I believe we're on SoundCloud now. We're on almost every podcasting avenue that is out there where you can find it. Just type in the Snapcast. You'll see our wonderful trademark P, and that will lead you directly to us.
Nice shade with the trademark there.
I can almost legally say it now. So yes, some allusion to things coming down the road. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We do live streams of different video games. Tyler has been leading up our streaming right now on both YouTube and on Facebook with some Smite action. So if you enjoy Smite or anything like that, give that a look. And we're also going to be doing other streams as well. It's just Tyler is currently the one who is able to do most streaming. A lot of us have been quite busy. But that's going to do it for us on this episode. Please stay tuned for the follow-ons. You're not going to want to miss them.